don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Durkin.
And a good morning to you on this beautiful Saturday morning.
Yes, yes. Well, we're going to pick up where we left off on a topic that was covered for several weeks in December. And we spent some time discussing the Edina Public Schools complete change in educational philosophy that's occurred in the last several years. And the goal that they had was to improve the racial achievement gap, which is a good goal. And as a result, the district embraced an ideology of racial identity politics, which we're going to find has not actually done much good to help. In fact, everything that they have done has actually not allowed them to improve their academics and to close the achievement gap. It's actually had the negative effect. So, unfortunately, we're going to learn more about that today.
That's right, Rebecca. The district incorporated the All for All plan back in 2013, and really its premise was that white racism, not socioeconomic or family breakdown, is really the primary cause of the district's achievement gap. Hmm. And then several years of ideological indoctrination and bullying in the classroom has really marginalized white and conservative students alike. But recent developments led to the departure of one particular Latino student. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that opposition to the district's ideology incurs bullying and certainly transcends race.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and joining us again over the phone this morning is Catherine Kirsten. And Catherine is a writer and attorney, a senior policy fellow and founding director at the Center of the American Experiment. She's also served as its chair from 1996 to 1998. Catherine has also served as a Metro columnist for the Star Tribune from 2005 to 2008, and before that was an opinion columnist for the paper for 17 years. Catherine has extensively covered the unfolding events as they pertain to racial identity politics in the Edina Public School District, and she graciously joins us again to give us an update. Catherine, thank you for joining us once again this morning on Education Nation.
Well, my pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. Well, what you have discovered is that the Edina School District's racial equity agenda is actually driving out some students that it's designed to benefit. And at the beginning of the school year, a Hispanic student left Edina Public Schools to pursue post-secondary enrollment options. But before we get into the specifics surrounding his departure, could you please share with our listeners why the student's family ultimately decided to leave their home country of Nicaragua in the first place?
Yes. The father of the family grew up in Nicaragua, or was born there, was a child there, and he and his parents fled the country in 1979 to get away from the Sandinista revolution, the Marxist guerrillas who were in charge at that point. And they wanted to escape the kind of absolutism, the kind of repression that we expect to see right. in authoritarian countries, and did in fact see in Nicaragua after they left.
Right, right. So here they left a Marxist regime where they were unable to have diversity of thought, true diversity of thought, came to the U.S. thinking for sure they would find it in the United States, certainly the land of the free, right?
Right.
And here, unfortunately, his story turns. But let's start by talking, too, about what kind of a student this kid was. I mean, he was not just your average student. Explain some of the scenarios.
No, no.
Yeah.
He was one of the most talented students at Edina High School. Mm-hmm. He, at that point, was a National Merits semifinalist, who had taken many advanced placement classes and scored at the top level, throughout his high school career, exactly the sort of young man that a school like Edina does not want to lose.
Exactly. Right. Isn't that for sure? And what can you tell us a little bit about some of the humiliating experiences that he had at the high school that really prompted their family to pull him out of the high school?
Yes. He complained of indoctrination, classroom discussions that were called discussions, but were nothing of the kind, you know, very one-sided, essentially propaganda exercises. He complained of that for quite some time, and complained of teachers who took class time to tout their favorite politicians and political causes without bringing in a variety of perspectives on these. He'd seen students harassed and accused of being racist and completely groundless, you know, without any grounds whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But he, and at one point, he actually talks about how there was a very biased presentation made by some fellow students, and he actually, you know, raised his hand and wasn't called, and then shouted out, let's discuss this, and was silenced. You know, no discussion was allowed. So
well,
this had happened to him a number of times.
Yeah, and on that last story, my understanding is that for his own presentation, I think all the students had to provide a presentation, a 7 to 10 minute presentation,
mm-hmm.
On a witch hunt. They were supposed to share a story about a witch hunt.
A modern day witch hunt,
which, you know, in and of itself, they're obviously pressing for a political discussion here.
Right,
So he surprises the teacher and actually shares a modern day witch hunt, which doesn't jive with the teacher's political bias. And he says that he and his partner were grilled for 40 minutes by this teacher and the other students in the class. And he said there was no discussion after any of the other, they endured six days of presentations. And he said the only other group that was grilled was a group that also chose a more traditionally conservative topic. I don't remember what the topic was, but so it wasn't
the topic
even,
was affirmative action.
There we
that
go.
Topic.
That's right.
His topic had to do with incidents following the Ferguson, Minnesota, Missouri, the famous Ferguson, Missouri.
Oh, there we go.
Racially tinged incidents.
But so to have 6 days of presentations, student presentations, and the only two that they had quote unquote time to discuss. And he was told later that it was to bring in diversity of opinion, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When he tried to provide the diversity of opinion in the other student presentations, he was told not to speak up by the teacher, even though he was raising his hand repeatedly. And so this it's just so blatant. It's just hard to believe that this can even happen in a classroom today. I'm appalled by it. I really am. And this is a Latino student, too, which I find very interesting. You know, this is not a white student. This is a Latino student.
Right. And that's why I'm sensing that racial equity has far more to do with silencing conservative thought as opposed to really closing achievement gaps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, the latter is being used to paint this false narrative of slander, really concerning the former. So I would like to know, Catherine, is it really correct to state that those in position of authority in this public school district are using bullying tactics to, say, you know, suppress contrary views, regardless of what the racial component is from the people that are opposing anything within this agenda?
Yes, absolutely, without a doubt. And this student's father said that they are not the only minority family who have pulled their kids from Edina High School. There are a number of others, and what he said to me is they are tired of their kids feeling different and separate because of the school's what he called relentless obsession with race, which has permeated every aspect of teaching in the school.
And that's even been done by design, too. I know that there was information regarding their all-in-all plan. I believe that there was a statement that even says something to the effect that we want to teach students to view everything through the lens of race. Wasn't that a quote
Correct.
That was stated by the district itself, right? Or one of the trainings?
Yeah, or through the lens of what they call racial equity, which means through the lens of race.
Yes, yeah, okay. Which is, it's really, again, this idea that they're trying, all of this is supposedly to close the achievement gap, when you can't even bring in the topic of poverty or family structure, the things that really affect the achievement gap.
I think the question that gets posed then, too, is what, I mean, it almost seems like they're redefining what achievement is. I mean, if it's groupthink that's all to be alike with no difference in thought whatsoever, everybody's thinking the same way, basically regurgitating the same thing. I mean, is that really their definition of, like, closing any type of achievement gap if everyone's just thinking the same way?
Apparently, and I think that, again, has to do with the sort of quasi-religious motivation here, you know, that rationality that what we think of as true liberal education, that means open, right? That means free.
Yes.
Right.
And that's not what it means to them. It means everybody being holding the correct opinion, almost in like a religious sort of orthodoxy.
Right.
You can't deviate or then you're a heretic.
Right. That's exactly what I'm sensing, too. And I'm finding it. It's just, it's so disconcerting to think that this is happening in a public school setting. You know, it'd be one thing if it was a private school that focused on racial equity practices, and this is what we want to focus on, and parents can choose or not choose. But one of the other things that I found rather appalling was the way they presented, and I'm going way off here,
that's
Mark,
okay.
So correct
go right
me
ahead.
If you,
no, go right ahead.
But is that they presented this new class, this AP 10th grade class. The district presented it to the parents as a required class for sophomores, AP pre-literature, to be a rigorous course that was going to allow them to focus on citizenship, I believe, is how they presented
it. Right. Yeah, having a common experience, enhancing citizenship.
Right. And so going back to this notion of it being almost like a religious orthodoxy, how can the district leaders feel comfortable presenting this class in one light when they know that what their real goal is to achieve a religious orthodoxy on this issue? I find the lack of transparency to be really concerning and disconcerting.
Yes. And I think that,
I want you to speak to that, but I also want to know, are parents learning through this that there is a lack of transparency, and are they demanding more information?
Yes. So as to the first question, I think what you see in the way this was handled by the English department and by the school leadership is that there is a contempt for parents, and in fact that comes out in the essay that one of the 10th grade English teachers wrote for another very obscure publication. I'm sure never dreaming that Edina parents would actually see it.
Sure,
but she describes exactly how and why this course was adopted, and essentially says this is about teaching all sophomores about their white privilege, about hearing their racial awakening stories, teaches about white supremacy. But she says a problem here has been parents. She said for every teacher, I don't have it in front of me, so I can't really quote it, but basically a teacher's biggest problem is questioning parents. Parents who don't take the teacher's word for everything, but she said basically we teachers know how to deal with them. We've been trained to deal with them. Actually, she says so. It's no surprise that if you want to avoid questioning parents, you don't really
tell them
openly. Yeah, describe what's happening in the class.
Wow.
And as to whether parents are concerned about this lack of transparency and demanding more information. Yes, they are increasingly after this has come to light, and there is going to be a meeting with the Edina school leadership to talk, in fact, about this very class. at some point here in the near future. And parents are looking at the books that kids are being forced to read and coming up with their objections and demanding answers.
Good. That's good, because they need to remember who the ultimate client is. I think that it's easy for public school teachers and leaders to forget that the clients really are still the parents. I mean, yes, the taxpayers are paying the bill, but ultimately, if you have unhappy clients, it's going to be difficult. And, you know, if it was something that was open discussion, I don't think parents would be, I don't think there'd be something that's a problem here, but it's that lack of transparency and an unwillingness to discuss it openly. And I guess they believe that they know what's best for your child.
Well, see, and then it always goes back to the fact that if there isn't transparency and you're trying to sneak something under the radar, I mean, that right there just sounds all the sirens that something's wrong. Why do we have to hide it if it's something that's to be celebrated and good?
Yeah, good point.
Exactly.
Well, and it begs the question, whose kids are they? Whose kids are they? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a question that I think that needs to be answered by our public, that, you know, do we believe that parents are the parents that should be in charge of their children's lives and outcomes and educations, or should the schools? And I think increasingly the schools have taken on more and more of that role. And interesting that they would then believe that, in this case, anyway, at the Edina Public School level, that they would know but what's best for your child. I find that really offensive as a parent.
I mean, that's really the collectivist mindset. Right. That's the collectivist viewpoint. It gets rid of individual thought, individual creativity and expression. Mm-hmm. And that's really been a major driving force in a lot of these racial equity and identity politics, is to teach from that collectivist viewpoint, to view other humans really as members of racial and ethnic groups rather than unique individuals who really transcend skin color. So, I mean, is it safe to say that the All for All plan, Catherine, I mean, with its racial identity politics, is really only reinforcing the stereotypes that they seek to tear down?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you see this when you look at the work of the Pacific Educational Group, which is a so-called diversity consulting group out of California, which has actually been present in many Minnesota school districts.
Right.
I think they began their work in Edina in 2009 and you know, lasted there for about 3 years because they're just frankly too hot to handle. But their legacy has continued on. Mm-hmm. And so they actually have a way of teaching teachers and frankly everybody else who works at the school, no matter what their job, and that's the primary thing they do. The first thing they do is demand that you see yourself as black, white, whatever your race might be, mm-hmm. whatever your sex is. And whenever you speak, you identify yourself that way first, is what I've been told by people who've been trained in this. You first have to say your race and your sex, because that conditions everything that you believe in their view.
Wow. I just, it's again, it's hard for us to even fathom that this is really happening. Mm-hmm. And yet we're going to have you back on next week, and we're going to be talking about some of that specific training that a bus driver received, that we've got access to some of the training materials and that type of thing. But you know, when we think about our country, as originally we called it the melting pot, right? And here we are, you know, fast forward almost 250 years after our founding. And what we find instead then is, rather than us being a melting pot where we all become one, you know, e pluribus unum, instead, it seems that there are many folks who want to continue to separate and continue to pull apart and stretch apart and label people into various groups. And as we call the identity politics, but how is that beneficial? What makes these people think that this is beneficial to our culture, to our country? Do you have any insight into that?
Well, you know, it does come from a particular philosophy with a certain set of assumptions at the base, and it is the philosophy that we've called cultural Marxism, in which people are divided into groups the way that, you know, the the bourgeoisie and the proletariat were so many years ago. There, the world is divided into oppressors and those who are oppressed. Mm-hmm. An incredibly simplistic way of understanding things.
Right.
But what it really does in the end is to make true democracy impossible, because if the idea is that you truly see the world differently in a way that others can't really understand, because you're black, you're white, that means it's impossible to deliberate about the common good and reach some kind of common understanding.
Conclusion. Yeah.
Yeah. It's impossible to do that. And what that means is that those who are strong, those who have power, for whatever reason, are those who increasingly call the shots. And that's what we're seeing at Edina High School.
Right. And that's what we're seeing at some college campuses across the nation as well.
Yeah.
There's no unity. There's no sense of unity. It's the loudest group or the strongest group that has the say.
Right. Not only is there the different identities, but they're being pitted one against the other. And that's just, there's no way you can come to a consensus of agreement or oneness.
Right.
You know, in your article, too, there, Catherine, you had stated that Flores' son repeatedly saw classmates publicly humiliated and shamed. We talked about that a little earlier.
Flores being the Latino student who left.
Yes. Forced to defend themselves from groundless charges of racism. You know, the student also told his parents that the many teachers immediately group and label students who don't agree with the teachers 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. So in light, and we've talked about this the last time we had you on the program, Catherine, we talked a little bit about the Minnesota Anti-Bullying Law, otherwise known as the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. You know, would the Flores family have a legitimate legal case against the district, or is the law, too, also a smokescreen that kind of views bullying as anything that would oppose left-wing Marxist policies, the very policies that this family originally tried to escape when they left Nicaragua?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, that's an excellent question. And of course, not only has this young man encountered this kind of bullying, but conservative students more generally have encountered some actual physical threats to their safety. All of this should be should fall under the umbrella of the anti-bullying law that you just mentioned. I mean, it does throw a very wide net. On the other hand, it was put in place to specifically protect and promote certain aspects of left-wing ideology, specifically LGBTQ, which very much pushed by those activist groups. But the school district authorities completely conveniently ignore this law when it comes to these kinds of problems that conservative students have.
So really what you're saying is that Flores and his family probably would have a case if they had the stomach to deal with going through that process, which would not be fun.
I mean, and it's really not a case. You know, you just go. Every school is supposed to have somebody, a teacher, a counselor, whoever, who is who's the proper person to go to with these kinds of complaints. You know, it's not like you're going to court.
I think
most parents don't think it would be of any benefit at all. This family, for example, went to see the principal. In fact, the principal required that this young man come in and see him after the young man asked for an apology from his teacher.
Right.
And the student's mother came, although the principal said that he shouldn't let his parents know about it.
Wow.
And there was no satisfaction offered whatsoever. You know, the principal took, according to the Flores family, took the part of the teacher. And you know, I've talked to many parents in the Edina schools who've had similar experiences. There's just no way that the school is going to acknowledge that there's a larger problem. And so they kind of throw up their hands.
Right. So the anti-bullying legislation is really only as good as those who are implementing it within their school, and they're only they're only going to work on certain elements that they think are bullying and not worry about the others.
I mean, who's going to be objective in the school district? That's the question to receive that complaint.
Yeah, interesting.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of taking legal action and that type of thing, the Young Conservatives Club at Edina High School recently filed a lawsuit in federal district court against Edina Public Schools Superintendent John Schultz and high school principal Andrew Beaton. The lawsuit comes just weeks after the club was on the receiving end of bullying and receiving online threats from students and a group called the Edina High School Anti-Fascists, or from the group Edina High School Anti-Fascists. And the bullying was the result of conservatives speaking out against protests that took place during a Veterans Day assembly in the school's gym. Do you think you could comment on the specific escalation of bullying that this YCC group experienced? And equally as disturbing, Principal Beaton's response.
Yes. So what happened, as far as I understand it, and having read the complaint and talking to some of the students involved, is that there was a protest at this Veterans Day assembly when veterans were there talking about their service in their country, and the national anthem and taps were played, and a group of students refused to stand, but did more than that. They kind of slouched by the bleachers in a very obvious way. They, I'm told, that they held up their cell phones so others would have a hard time hearing the music. They played music on the cell phones themselves. And so these conservative students objected and said that was not respectful, and they thought that it was wrong. Mm-hmm. They objected. In particular, on their private group me, and I'm no techno wizard, but apparently this is a kind of a private but shared list of people who receive certain texts. So, you know, this escalated on social media over the weekend, and quite quickly, two things happened. First of all, the conservative students who'd objected to the protesters began to be threatened by some of the protesters and their supporters. The complaint talks about how at times as many as 30 students surrounded some of these young conservatives and threatened them, pushed them into lockers, threatened if they didn't change their political views, they would, you know, they would do something bad to
That's
them.
Pretty frightening.
And then this Antifa group, it really was, this Antifa group put up a YouTube video with this really scary so-called Guy Fawkes anarchist mask on it, with this kind of mechanical voice saying things like, we will make sure that we cut your evil nerve off at the roots, or you know, really threatening words along those lines. And when the students went to complain to the principal, according to the complaint, the principal basically said, hey, you know, it's your own fault because you objected to these protesters and criticized them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what, Catherine? We are actually coming up to the end of our show here, and that might be a good place for us to break off, and we'll start back up with you at the beginning of next show to talk about Principal Beaton's response, and we'll kind of take it from there and look at what the practices, or where these practices came from within the Edina Public Schools, and hear more about the bus driver training too. There's so much to cover on this topic, it's overwhelming. So we want to thank you so much for joining us on this show today, Catherine. And Mark, I don't know if you have any parting thoughts here before we close up, and we will have her back next Saturday.
No, we're just so appreciative, Catherine, of everything that you've contributed on this story, and we're certainly looking forward to really touching base next week about the principal's response, which I think people will be really, their jaws will drop when they hear this response.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us again, and we hope our listeners will join us again next week on Education Nation, and you can check out the podcast at KLBB. Thank you.